there's a challenge around inequality. I mean, people have been talking about it. There's been signs of improvement in some areas, but fundamentally, we live in a highly, highly unequal world.
Hello, this is the Weekly Tradecast, a podcast brought to you by UNCTAD, the UN's trade and development body. I'm Sarah Toms. We're exploring how major events are shaping trade and development and how that affects billions of people around the world. This week, we're looking at the update to the UN's Trade and Development Report that's just been released. On the positive side, despite high inflation, high interest rates, and gloomy forecasts, the global economy grew last year. The bad news, the update says, is that the positive momentum is going to waste. As many countries struggle to get back to pre-pandemic growth, various conflicts, rising shipping costs, and high debt levels all add to uncertainties for economies and global trade. As policymakers focus on interest rates and inflation, the update says the urgent challenges of climate change, underinvestment, and inequality are growing ever more serious. Well, here to tell us more is Richard Cosell-Wright, an economist and author. Richard is director of the Globalization and Development Strategies Division. He graduated from the University of Cambridge and is a keen Arsenal fan. How is that going for you, Richard?
Pretty well this year.
Good news. So, Richard, give us an overview of the update of the Trade and Development Report. What are the highlights and what are the challenges?
Yeah, I think you mentioned already, the world economy slowed down last year, but not as much as many people feared, right, including ourselves at the beginning of the year. So there were a lot of potential risks, a lot of potential slippages that didn't really materialize. 2.6, 2.7%, it's not a great performance. It's much lower than the average from before the pandemic. In the 5 years before the pandemic, the average was much higher than that. So it's not that it's a great performance, but it could have been worse. And I think it wasn't as bad as expected because the two big economies in the global economy, the US and China, performed quite a lot better than many people had expected, including ourselves at the beginning of the year. Both those economies exceeded our expectations. And that's, I guess, a positive. On the downside, the European economy, which is the other big triad in the global economy, is continued to perform very weakly.
So why did those two large economies do better than expected?
In the case of the US, consumer spending held up much more strong because this was a period of high interest rates. Remember, the Fed had hiked interest rates to over 5%. So there was an expectation that consumer spending would fall, and it didn't fall. Biden's own policies, his Inflation Reduction Action and some of the other ones, have had a positive impact on some elements in manufacturing. So investment in some sectors of the economy held up better than expected. So there were elements there that I think people didn't anticipate at the beginning of the year. In the case of China, you know, people underestimate the Chinese economy, I think, in general. I mean, investment has remained very strong. They have problems. They have a problem in their housing market in particular. And I think people were looking at that and worrying that that could have deeper ramifications for the Chinese economy in terms of strong headwinds. And they haven't materialized. And China has a lot of policy space. It has a lot of fiscal room. It has a lot of monetary policy room. It reduced interest rates as other people were raising interest rates. And I think that's a combination that took it over. They had targeted 5% at the start of the year. We were not convinced they would hit it, but in the end, they were above 5%. So it did well as an economy.
Now, you mentioned COVID and the global economy bounced back, I think, from the pandemic quite strongly. So did it surprise you that growth was weaker last year and this year? Why is it still such an uneven recovery and taking so long?
The supply side shocks have lasted longer than I think many people expected. I think, at least from our point of view, there was an optimism that the pandemic forced a lot of out-of-the-box thinking, which we thought would persist. And in some respects, I think policymakers have reverted back to a much more cautionary position. And we saw that obviously with the hike in interest rates. by the leading central banks. And there's a real concern now that fiscal contraction is on the cards. So the government policy is kind of fallen back into what we've been criticizing since the global financial crisis, which is a combination of macroeconomic policies and trade policies that are not necessarily conducive to a robust and strong global economy.
Beyond what's happening now, the report warns of serious longer-term challenges for the global economy. Tell us more about what they are and what impact you expect them to have.
This is what makes it worse. They're not kind of separate challenges. They're all closely interconnected challenges. So you have obviously the climate challenge, which is a massive investment challenge, right? I mean, the only way we can address the problems of mitigation and adaptation is through big investment push, both public and private. So that's a big challenge. We know that. There's a challenge around inequality. I mean, people have been talking about it for at least since the global financial crisis as being a persistent, not only an economic challenge, but a social and political challenge too. And it hasn't really been addressed. I mean, there's been signs of improvement in some areas, but fundamentally, we live in a highly, highly unequal world, both within countries and across countries. There's a problem of debt. Part of the reason countries did better last year than we expected, because consumers borrowed. At some point, there's a breaking point, or potentially a breaking point, and particularly in developing countries, because they have to borrow in foreign currencies. But it's not only developing countries that are concerned about the high levels of government and household and corporate debt. And then underinvestment. I mean, we've been warning since the global financial crisis that levels of investment have not recovered and returned to what we would want to see given the multiple challenges that we face. And that partly, I think, reflects asymmetries and imbalances in all economies that have to do with inequality. There's a set of interactive challenges that we need to tackle together, and we're not really doing a very good job. If you take the climate crisis, for example, the kind of investment that is being made in energy transition, in transport transition, it's just not on the scale that we need. And developing countries are not being given the support that they need in particular, because not only do they face an energy transition, but they are already being hit by climate shocks, and they need to build up their resilience to be able to meet those shocks, because they have a negative impact on the economy too. They can't make the investments. They then don't have access to affordable capital to be able to make those investments. So a lot of them are caught in a very vicious circle in which the climate crisis perpetuates a development crisis.
What are the prospects then for developing economies? How can they manage high debt levels, slower growth alongside all these challenges of climate change, underinvestment and inequality? It's a difficult balancing act, isn't it?
It's a difficult balancing act that ultimately we need the international architecture to step up to the plate. You know, developing countries at the end of the day will have to mobilize a lot of the resources themselves. But, you know, the international community has to step up. I mean, UNCTAD has long argued that when it comes to the debt question, we've been delivering too little support too late for 40 years. And part of the problem there is we don't have institutions in the way we have the World Bank and the IMF that are dedicated to short and long-term lending. We don't have institutions to handle sovereign debt problems in a proper way. And so we've argued for a long time that you need some kind of multilateral mechanism to allow countries that fall into serious debt distress or out-and-out default to work themselves through that problem in a measured way that doesn't destroy their growth prospects. So we need to see reforms of the international architecture for sure to meet the kind of multiple challenges that we face.
How do we get that momentum going again? What policies and actions need to happen to get the global trade and growth back on track?
I guess, ironically, a kind of growing recognition that business as usual doesn't work here. And so there's a sense of urgency. I mean, you know, we've just gone through the hottest 12 months on record, and climate shocks are intensifying everywhere. So I think, you know, there is that growing sense of urgency. You can see that in the US, right? I mean, the Biden administration's policy, I don't think they're yet on the scale that is required, but clearly they mark a break with the past. That's a welcome shift. I mean, a similar thing has happened in Europe, again, not on the scale that is required. Obviously, the one big breakthrough in Dubai last year at the COP was the creation of a loss and damage fund. That is a recognition that the damage that is incurred by developing countries needs international support. But again, you know, they were committed $750 million when analysis tells you the damage is in the tens of billions, if not the hundreds of billions of dollars. So we've seen these kind of steps forward. They're not strides yet, and we need strides, not steps. We have to hope the COP this year, for example, is a financing COP. I mean, all the focuses are going to be on these questions of how we mobilize resources. It's easy to be pessimistic, but I think that there are good signs there. And I think the other good sign is that developing countries are beginning to create their own institutions to help in breakthrough financing constraints. So, you know, things like the New Development Bank, which is expanding, the Asia Infrastructure Investment Bank, there are various other mechanisms that they're beginning to try and build up, which is a positive step forward.
Well, let's end on a positive note there, Richard. So thank you to UNCTAD's Richard Cosell-Wright for being this week's guest. Tune in to the Weekly Tradecast this week and every week for more insights on the most pressing issues around the world of trade and development. There's even more on our website, unctad.org. I'm Sarah Toms in Geneva. Goodbye for now.